You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
If we look at the two West divisions, there are two totally different stories. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and in the American League West, it appears to be a two-team race at this point between the Mariners and the Rangers, whereas in the NL West, it's totally open. The best teams have 500 records, and the Padres are 2.5 games back, and they're in last place. So that division seems to be wide open. Let's talk to our reporters about that. Ken, first of all, we're going to need to talk a little bit about just the two home runs that Noah Syndergaard hit off of Kenta Maeda. And the one thing that I liked about Maeda's comments were that he was not trying to mask anything. He basically said they were definitely not good pitches. So I guess everybody on the Dodgers side just realized that that's just something that happened, and it wasn't for, I don't know, lack of anything, any kind of effort, but at the same time, I mean, they just weren't very good pitches.
Yeah, and, you know, I think really on the three-run homer, the real problem was that he walked and hit the batters ahead of him, and that really made the difference. You know, a solo home run, and they're going to be tied. So, you know, and that really raises kind of a potential problem with Maeda in his last couple starts is that he doesn't seem to have the pinpoint control that he had in his earlier starts. And he also doesn't seem to be trusting his fastball the way he did earlier. So, you know, whether he's just coming down to earth or whatever, his last couple starts haven't been quite as sharp. And they haven't been bad, but they haven't been as sharp as his April starts.
I guess it's something that we can't expect. I mean, like you said, it's just sort of coming down a little bit. I mean, it's not out of the question that he wouldn't be able to maintain something close to that. But as we know, once pitchers are around for a while and then there's video to be watching on them, scouting reports get better, players are able to have something concrete to actually plan when they're about to face him. I mean, those are all things that just sort of go in the natural course throughout the season, no matter who it is, right?
Well, yeah, you know, unless he's going to come over here and be, you know, a Hideo Nomo Rookie of the Year.
Right.
And April he was, but in May he isn't. So, you know, what the real Maeda is, we don't know. We haven't seen him enough. You know, you would, as you were kind of hinting at, as the league gets to see him, you know, second time through, he hasn't played his division rivals really that much, and but he will by the end of the year. So it's going to be interesting to see the whole adjustment. Now, he is a veteran, you know, even though he's technically a rookie. And,
right.
You know, he didn't become one of the best pitchers in Japan without knowing how to adjust. So you assume he will. However, he's facing a different caliber of hitters here. And, you know, taking away the home runs last night by a pitcher, you know, he's going to face real hitters that are going to get a book on him. And, again, when he's throwing an 89-mile-an-hour fastball, as he has been the last couple of starts, it doesn't leave much room for error. He really has to be pinpoint in his command.
Yeah, just to show how rare it was what happened with Syndergaard hitting those two home runs. And he became just the second Dodgers pitcher to allow multiple homers to a pitcher in the same game. And it hasn't happened since 1929 with a pitcher named Doug McWeeny. And I'm really just bringing this up because the 13-year-old of me finds the name Doug McWeeny very funny. So move on from there. And I do want to talk about the Dodgers' bullpen that has not allowed an earned run from my note-taking here in a very long time. So spanning like 15 innings, 5 games, 21 strikeouts. So that's something that, Ken, you and I have not talked about a whole lot because that's not been the case with the Dodgers' bullpen in quite a while. So that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, no, it's great. This has been so far kind of a streaky bullpen leading up to Kenley Jansen, who's been, you know, on a perpetual hot streak. But the rest of the bullpen has had its moments, good and bad. And right now it's on a hot roll. But it led up to this with a week with a really horrible week. So it's kind of been a roller coaster. Lately, Joe Blanton has really stepped up and has pitched well, and Pedro Baez has pitched well enough to be given the ball in the eighth inning, but the level of trust there is still a little shaky because they've already asked Kenley Jansen to have two outings of more than one inning, and there probably will be more to come.
Chris, I'm trying to figure this out, and it sounds like Bruce Bochy is also. So he seems to be a little baffled by the lack of offense still. And I'm a little surprised that we're still talking about the lack of offense. I was looking at the batting averages. It's not like there's that many guys that are hitting so far below their career averages. So is it they're just not taking, I guess, advantage of a lot of opportunities. Is that accurate?
That would be very accurate, Allison. They're not hitting very well. They have not hit very well lately with runners in scoring position. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're abysmal. It's in the 100 range. Now, all these guys, in an odd sense, they're kind of encouraged because it's just not going to continue. These guys are going to start hitting, and if they perform anywhere close to their usual standards, and that 500 record should improve as a result.
Yeah. So recently, they had a walk-off walk. Very good by Buster Posey, a clutch walk, to avoid a sweep by the Blue Jays. I think, so I have these numbers written down. So over five games, they were four for 43 with runners in scoring position. I think that's what we're talking about. So that's an 0.93 average. Yeah, so that is really awful and surprising given the veteran presence in this lineup, the amount of guys that don't seem to be the kind to press or try to do too much or blah, 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 all the things that we hear when it comes to why a team isn't hitting, all the cliches. I just don't see the Giants as being those kinds of players.
Neither do I, but again, I think it is a phase. Buster Posey isn't going to do this all season.
Right.
Pence isn't going to all do this all season. They just aren't. And Brandon Crawford and Matt Duffy, who they'll eventually hit, or in Duffy's case, keep on hitting. I mean, he's one guy who's been productive. The game doesn't really, the season doesn't really begin until June. We're still well short of that. So they've got time to straighten themselves out.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like I said at the beginning, I mean, this, like, you look at the standings, it just makes me laugh because the Padres are, like, many, many games below 500, and they're, like, 2.5 out of first place. So, that's what we're looking at right now. Okay, so they just ended a 3-game losing streak with that walk-off walk. And now so Matt Cain, I missed this one completely. So I was looking at what he's been doing recently. And the last time we talked, I believe I was very gloomy and sad because I felt like maybe this was sort of the end of the road, perhaps, and that his comeback attempt wasn't going very well. And then he had, like, a really good outing. So he exceeded 7 innings for the first time since June of 2014. Through 8 innings, so what did you glean from that outing?
Well, Allison, I think a lot of people agreed with you. Certainly a lot of Giants fans in the Bay Area agreed with you that maybe this might be the end of the road for Matt Cain. But that outing, I think, changed a lot of minds, even within the Giants organization. If he can repeat that or come close to repeating that just a little bit more often, it can be 3 out of 4 outings or 3 out of 5 outings, I think he'll keep his job in rotation and everything will be hunky-dory the rest of the year. Of course, they're going to need that sort of improvement from Jake Peavy also if they're going to keep this 5-man rotation together.
So I looked at the schedule, and I saw that the Padres had a doubleheader at Wrigley Field against the Cubs. I naturally thought that the Padres were going to sweep that doubleheader. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously, I did not think that was going to happen, but it did. And so now we're going to talk about it. I'm Allison Footer, and I'm here with A.J. Casavell, our wonderful Padres beat writer. So, A.J., tell me about what stood out to you on those two wins last Wednesday at Wrigley Field for the Padres.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's just baseball. You don't. When the Padres play a doubleheader at Wrigley Field against the Cubs, you don't expect them to win 2 games. But honestly, at this point, whenever Drew Pomeranz pitches, the Padres have a chance. I mean, it's too early to call him an ace, just because that definition is bestowed upon guys who have earned it. But he's for a month into the season, he's been the Padres' best pitcher, and every time he's pitched, they have a chance to win. His curveball has been unbelievable. He has a 1.80 ERA. His last 18 innings allowed 7 hits and only 1 run. So he's pitching like one of the best pitchers in baseball. That was game 2. Game 1 actually might have been one of their best wins of the year, just in large part because the Cubs are such a proficient offense, and when they get rolling, they're hard to stop, but the Padres kind of stopped them. They held them in check once they got the 4 runs, and the Padres battled back against a pretty good bullpen. So All in all, it was probably the Padres' best day of the season so far. It's hard to argue otherwise. It just seemed like the Cubs that had won 8 in a row. But I think what you're seeing with the Padres is that they're at the very least they're a resilient bunch that isn't gonna lie over when they get down by a run or two in a hostile environment like Wrigley.
Yeah, I mean, we should say in that second game, to go back to that for a second, that was a 1-0 win. And I don't know. I mean, when you talk to starting pitchers after games like that, you know, they'll act like they are unaware of the score, and it's not so much how many runs their team is scoring as much as it is how many runs he's giving up. But at the same time, that is, like, really stressful to hang in there, to have such a marginal lead and be able to be that kind of mentally tough and be able to get through that. That's not everyone can do that.
Yeah, and Pomerantz has been involved in a couple of those this year. His matchup against Kershaw was the same thing, and then last week he faced Syndergaard, and that was 1-0 for a while. So he's had no shortage of pitchers duels. He's also faced Madison Bumgarner. He faced Velasquez in that 16-er strikeout game that he had. So he's been going up against aces kind of one after the other. And every time we ask him about it, he's kind of just like, well, you know what? I don't really care who I'm facing. My goal is to allow zero runs, and if I do that, we'll win the game. Well, that was actually the case on Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So they've won 5 of 7, thrown back-to-back shutouts for the first time since July of 2014. And they're in the middle of a 9-5 stretch. And this is what stands out, is that the pitching staff has a 2.54 ERA, and the bullpen has a 1.94 ERA. So, you know, relievers with 10 straight scoreless, including that doubleheader day where they had, like, 7 scoreless innings. And the whole point of this is, of course, no matter what kind of team you have and no matter where they are projected to end the season, a stretch of good pitching, this is the result. And they have to feel good about all of their pitchers kind of overachieving at this point.
Yeah, their whole bullpen was fantastic on Wednesday. Their bullpen's been fantastic for about 2 weeks now. They really struggled when St. Louis came to town at the end of April. And since then, it's almost like they've kind of been pitching with a chip on their shoulder. A lot of people were not pleased with the bullpen, with several guys in the bullpen. Brandon Mauer, the setup man, has been lights out since then. His fastball velocity is actually, in the last couple weeks, it's up to like 97.5 miles an hour on average. And his slider is, in my opinion, honestly, maybe the best pitch on the Padres right now. And it's getting swings and misses. Fernando Rodney's been incredible. The whole bullpen's been great. Ryan Buchter's been an absolute steal. They kind of plucked him out of the minor leagues. So the bullpen's been great. The starting rotation, a big part of the reason the bullpen has been great is because the bullpen had been so taxed like they were earlier. And if you're going to win, you're going to need pitching performances like that. You're going to need guys going 5, 6, 7 innings into the game and not putting such a burden on the bullpen, which is what the Padres starters have done.
And offensively, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like John Jay, his numbers are standing out. I was taking some notes on some of the better offensive performances. It's been a couple days, but he's had a pretty nice stretch. So would you say he's probably the most productive hitter at this point?
Right now he is. I mean, Will Myers and Matt Kemp have kind of fallen into a little bit of a slump, which has coincided with the Padres' hot streak. John Jay, the thing with John Jay was early in the season, his batting average wasn't terrible. But he was kind of the beneficiary of some 16 hoppers that snuck through. Now he's hitting the ball square, he's hitting the ball hard, and he's getting rewarded with extra base hits. Right now he's their best hitter, and he's reaching base too, which is, I mean, all you need out of a leadoff man.
Explain to me how this is supposed to be like you win the majority of your home games, you lose half your road games, you become a contender. And it seems to be the opposite for the Rockies, and it's got to be so frustrating for them because Coors Field is the place for other teams to get in their heads, not the Rockies, right?
That's right. I mean, I guess if it is going to get in your head, it's going to get in your pitcher's head. I don't know what's going on here. The only somewhat tangible explanation I've received is that they're in a stretch of games where they were scheduled for 20 straight days, and they had one game called because of inclement weather. I mean, it snowed that morning, but it seemed like the Rockies and the Pirates weren't that interested in playing that day, so they ended up not having a game. But there could be some fatigue here, but none of that fully explains what's going on. I do believe that the pitching, which has had something like during during a home losing streak, they've had somewhere around a 9 ERA the starting pitchers have. That's been a real problem. But then also as the losing streak at home went on, the offense kind of struggled a bit after doing pretty well on a road trip where they went 6-4.
Yeah, so that new wall, right? So they've had a lot of home runs, would-be home runs that are no longer home runs. Is that right? The Rockies have kind of gotten a little burned on that.
Yeah, it's strange. At the park, they've erected a larger, higher fence around the bullpen. Now, as we talk now, Charlie Blackman's just hit one over that. So maybe that's what you have to do, just hit the ball over it. And it's weird because it's not like the fence goes up when one team's batting and comes down when the other team's batting. So there have been some weird luck things that have happened here. But I just think overall they haven't pitched nearly as well at home as they have on the road.
Yeah, that's amazing. So recently they have a 6-4 road trip through all NL West teams. So it was the Diamondbacks, the Padres, the Giants. They win in San Francisco, which is a really hard place to win. They haven't had a winning West Coast trip, an all West Coast trip since 2009. So overall, I mean, I guess when you're coming off that road trip and if you're looking at the team, and of course it's still early, but it looked to be shaping up regardless of this this losing home streak. But they seem to be learning to play as a team here.
Yeah, they are, and I think this National League West also has given them a chance to come together. Somebody is going to come together and do well in this division. Right now, what's happened is almost none of the teams are playing well at home. I think the Giants were around when we did this talk, somewhere around 500 at home. So nobody's playing well at home. Nobody's very consistent. The Diamondbacks have played very well on the road here early on. And everybody for the last week or so has been anywhere from 2.5 to 4 games apart. So, yeah, this is a strange division in the beginning. But if you're going to struggle, I guess it's good to struggle in this division where everybody's doing the same thing.
Right. So as we're speaking, and, of course, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks are playing right now while we're talking, but the Dodgers are the only team in the division with an over 500 record, and they're one game over 500. The Diamondbacks, who have won several games in a row, are one game under 500. And then the Padres are 7 games under, and they're only 4 back in the division. So that's strange. And I would imagine nobody thought from this division that any of that would be happening.
Well, I think a lot of people thought that the Dodgers or Giants would run away and hide. But if you look at the pitching, even of those two teams, there were some questions coming into this year, and they haven't really answered those questions. And it is really strange in this division, too. The Rockies, they cannot beat the Padres to save their souls, and nobody can figure out why. Just like the Giants had all kind of problems with the Rockies, and no one can figure that out either. So, and also the Diamondbacks can win at Coors Field, but they can't beat the Rockies at their own park. I mean, all kind of odd things are happening. And this division, while you look at it and you say the Dodgers and the Giants, because they have been the teams, and, you know, with it being an even-numbered year, the Giants are supposed to win the World Series, it seems like if one of the other three teams really catches fire at home and on the road, then they can make this thing interesting.
Diamondbacks are a few games under 500, but there's always hope because they play in the NL West, where the best team is right around 500. I'm Allison Footer, and I'm here with Steve Gilbert to talk all things Diamondbacks. Steve, it's very early in the season, and this is probably not what it's going to look like at the end. It still just makes me laugh that the Diamondbacks can be 17-20 and 2 games out of first place. Padres can be in dead last place, be 2.5 games out of first place. So that's kind of just how things are shaping up right now. It's anybody's guess who's going to pull away with this thing, right?
Yeah, it always, and maybe because I follow the division, obviously, closer than the others, it just always seems like there's something, when something weird happens, it happens in the NL West. And right now, I believe one team will get on a little bit of a roll here and has an opportunity to put some distance between themselves and the rest of the division. Now, who that's going to be, whether it's the Giants, the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, the Rockies, whatever, some team is going to put together a winning streak here and take advantage of the other guys not playing quite so well. But so far that hasn't happened, so the Diamondbacks take great hope in it that it can still be them that does it.
Yeah, so they've won their last 5 of 7. So, I mean, they had a pretty rough stretch recently, but things are improving. just in general, what have you noticed? What are some of the things that have gone right for them during that pretty good week?
Well, again, it goes back to the starting pitching. Greinke, before last night, had pitched really well in his last couple starts. Shelby Miller finally seemed to kind of turn a corner in Atlanta and pitched well. Patrick Corbin pitched well. And that just kind of sets up everything. It makes the bullpen fresher and makes the usage of the guys down there more regulated and more what they had hoped for at the start of the year. And it puts less pressure on the offense. Also, they just seem to play much better away from home, and I don't think there's any explanation for that. I keep thinking it's a fluke thing and it's eventually going to even out, but they play far better on the road than they do at home, and it's certainly a mystery. We were joking with Chip Hale before the last road trip ended about maybe putting the guys up in a hotel downtown Phoenix for for the homestand, but I think everyone's kind of scratching their heads trying to figure out why it is that all of a sudden at home seems to be a problem for them.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like Greinke might still be trying to adjust to that place, but I was looking through, I just was running through some of the stats and running through, like, the hitters, and I noticed Paul Goldschmidt is low on the batting average at 232, but has 36 walks. What has been, are they just pitching around him? Is it a fact of, like, the rest of the lineup not being much of a threat? It seems like high on base percentage numbers, but low batting average. What's happening with him?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, Allison, is that with A.J. Pollock out, the lineup isn't quite as intimidating as it was in the past. And I think that he's got a very good eye at the plate, and he's not going to chase out of the zone, or at least not as often as others. So he's been taking his walks, and they need to drive him in and make pitchers pay for that. Otherwise, they're going to continue to do that to him. And I think you saw last year he drew a lot of walks as well. But pitchers, you know, when guys behind him would get hot or guys in front of him would get hot and get out of base, they'd have to pitch to him. And this year that just hasn't quite been the case. And he just hasn't seemed like himself at the plate. Not sure what to attribute that to. They made a small mechanical change when they were just in Denver this past week that seemed to help a little bit. So we'll see if that bears fruit. But other than that, it's been kind of a mystery to explain, kind of like with the home woes, you know, why he's kind of had some struggles at the plate, but he is still getting on base and drawing his walks and still able to do some damage when he gets a pitch to hit.
Okay, what's going on with David Peralta? There seems to be some injury issues there. What's the update on him?
Yeah, he was hit twice in the forearm during that Giants series last month, and apparently some of that swelling had worked its way down into his wrist. And so in Atlanta, he missed a couple games and then missed the series for the most part in Denver because of wrist soreness. So they had an MRI taken and came back and said that there was no structural damage in the wrist. He's starting to feel a little better. So while they're not completely ruling out the DL at the moment, just because they have a short bench as it is, it looks like it's not going to be anything serious or anything that would keep him out for a long period of time.
Okay, and there's one other transaction that just stood out to me only because he, this player, played in Houston and had his star years in Houston. That's Michael Bourne, who signed like a minor league deal, and I think it's a double-A affiliate. But it kind of makes, well, it doesn't kind of make sense. It makes a lot of sense. It's something that maybe isn't that noticeable, but tremendous speed, still a very fast guy. Obviously, his bat is not what it was. But with Pollock out for the year, I mean, that's just a pretty logical reinforcement, I guess, in case things, you know, get really thin at the big league level.
Yeah, they've used Chris Owings out in center field, and he's done a nice job for them, and considering that he hadn't played center field, you know, even in high school, he never played center field, so you gotta go back to when he was just a kid. So he's done a commendable job filling in there. But beyond him, you know, they have David Peralta, who can play a little bit of center. But after that, it was Socrates Brito who they were kind of counting on, and he's just been slumping at AAA ever since they sent him down earlier this year. So they really didn't have a lot of depth there, and they figured, you know, why not take a chance with Michael Bourne and see maybe he swings the bat well down there in Mobile, AA. And if he does, then they can use him if they need him at the big league level. I think the reason that they sent him to AA was because they had some AAA outfielders they didn't want to lose playing time for, but in AA they had an opening, so it kind of fit naturally for them. But that was the reason why they chose Mobile over, say, AAA Reno for him.